So retweet the space, get some folks in here. Looks like things are working out really exactly as I'd hoped from like Thursday and Friday, where the theory was that, Friday the stock market closes, you can't buy the ETF Bitcoin. We know that the entire last week there was strong inflows into Bitcoin ETF buyers, and you can see all that data. Because it's basically published. And the expectation was that, you'd have ongoing buying via the ETF because there's no really reason for that to stop. A lot of those are long-term holders and funds and this and that buying it. Also, you saw things like the, GBTC Link Trust just completely moon for no good reason. And just showed you there's kind of like an appetite to buy crypto-related shit in the stock market. And my theory was going into the weekend was basically that, by Sunday morning, or late Sunday night, you would have BTC break its all-time high, because that way the ETF buyers who come in afterwards will have to buy higher. And there was a bunch of shorts positioned above BTC all-time high that were ready to be squeezed, which is what happened. After like a little bit of a brief dip on Saturday. And then things can run from there. And, the ETF buyers are now locking in this higher price. The shorts are basically just getting wrecked. And then, as kind of predicted, like proof of work coins that haven't run yet will start to run. Things like Litecoin, things like Ethereum Classic. And that's exactly, what has begun to happen now. So that's why, like, last week I bought, Litecoin and Dogecoin and Ethereum Classic and all these, what they consider dino coins, because it's just basically free money at this point. This is pretty much exactly what happened in November 2020 when Bitcoin broke all-time high. And what you wind up getting is, now a whole bunch of newbies are all telling each other and their friends, oh, hey, Bitcoin is up and, we're in a bull market and blah, blah, blah. And everyone will start telling their friends, and they'll all start showing up on apps and things. They won't look at charts, none of that shit. And they'll just start buying everything. If you ask around at work, you'll start noticing that's, people are starting to, talk a little bit about, crypto. Oh, it's going up and whatever. How do I buy crypto? I've never bought it before. And people are going to say things like, well, don't miss this time around, like you did last time. And really, like, legitimately, there's a lot of coins that are really, really just starting to take off. So plenty of things out there that people are not going to get wrecked on if they start today. Things, really all of the older proof of work coins that have not gone up yet. So anything that's not Ethereum, anything that's not Bitcoin, pretty much is on its way up now. Like, I bought like Ethereum Classic day before yesterday at like 35, now it's about 38. My expectation with that is that, it's going to, run quite a lot, actually. The previous cycle, Ethereum Classic went to about 177. It's currently at 3780. And like, it has a FIB extension that's past the prior high that sits at right around $370, which is about a 10x from here. I think that's a very, very feasible target as things start picking up. Like, for some reason, every time I like fade Ethereum Classic, it goes bonkers. And I think this time will be no different in that regard. There's no really obvious reason it will behave any more differently than before. Pretty much what happens is there's a bunch of coins on CoinMarketCap and on CoinGecko, and people will look down that list and go, huh, what hasn't run yet? And the simple thesis is that, like, if it's secure and safe, it's proof of work, you're probably not going to go to zero, and you're not really that, you know, you haven't run that much yet, and there's a lot of upside remaining, then it's likely to run. So take, for example, Ethereum Classic. Like, it's most of its trading resistance is at $46. It's at $38. It's just pretty much free money at this point. Like that's just all it is. And even if you sell it for a small gain, just for fun, and, like, you know, buy something else, whatever, it's cool. You don't have to try to run it up all the way or whatever. But I think Litecoin, Ethereum Classic, Doge, these are all really good charts right now. And I don't think I'm going to touch them until each of them has essentially 10x'd, which should amount to a pretty good amount of money. The other proof of work things, like, for example, Zephyr that I like, I think that will run. It's starting to pick up steam now as we speak, and it's like sitting at $25, really pretty much like 29 is its major resistance level. It's made two attempts at breaking that already, and this next one I think will pretty much do it. And the reason is because Bitcoin sort of is like wind in the sails of miners, and Zephyr is all about hardcore miners and traders. Most people in Zephyr are serious crypto people. You don't have too many randos in there, and it's sort of like I would consider like the most elite sort of crypto nerd coin on the market today. Like, only people that are hardcore crypto, like, fanatics understand why Zephyr's cool, besides the fact that, like, the tax implications, essentially, of a black box where there literally are no taxes inside of it, because that's the same thing of, like, anything there's not a ledger for, a public ledger for, there are basically no taxes within that system. It's that simple. It's no different than if you go to the stock market and buy an ETF. You don't get a ledger that shows you all the trades an ETF has made. And you don't get taxed on every single transaction ETF is made either. The same thing is true for Zephyr. Anything that doesn't have a ledger, like, you know, any kind of movement within that wallet just essentially doesn't exist. So there's no, like, legality or any other issue regarding that at this point. So Zephyr just has, like, you know, the benefit is it's, like, fundamentally tax advantaged. So the upside risk short term, like, let's say I buy Litecoin today, and I throw $100,000 into it, it goes to $1 million. Like, I'm going to be paying something in the neighborhood of, $300,000 to $400,000 in taxes as part of that process. Whereas, like, the Zeph ZSD pair, you basically don't pay anything. And so that is a utility that nothing else in crypto has. And therefore, like, the probability that people are going to realize this one by one, as each day goes by, someone's going to go, hey, wait a minute, like, that's a thing. It's going to create, like, a floor buying pressure for it because it's so interesting. So I think that's, like, one of the reasons why, like, people are going to get it. This is not, like, some sort of financial advice or tax advice or whatever. I'm just pointing out, like, this is why some people might perceive that as interesting. It's why I perceive it as not kind of interesting. And I believe others will as well. And so that's my thesis for why that ought to do well, besides the fact that it's only like 70 or 80 million market cap right now, which means it has a relatively straightforward 10x upside, in my opinion. And it's following the fractals of a lot of other coins that did similar things, like Caspa and other early proof of work coins. If you go back to any early coin, their charts look basically identical to Zephyr. And the good news is everyone's bored of it already because it, like, pumped November 21st, it peaked out, and now it's already, March 11th, and it's already done a full, like, consolidation and everything. Those are the kind of charts you want to pick up. So this is why, like, Litecoin, Ethereum Classic, Zephyr, anything that has, like, a long consolidation and has had a nice pullback is, like, a low financial risk in the sense that the downside price risk, I don't mean like other risks, but like the downside price action risk is sort of mitigated already by, you know, creating a floor. And you can define that risk as, let's say, you know, let's say you go back to that floor price, maybe you drop 50%. And that, in crypto, by the way, that's nothing. 99% is something, 50% is nothing, right? Like in crypto. So as long as you're willing to sort of ride out those kinds of downside risks, generally speaking, these are all pretty good buys. And you can sort of like basically just pick a bag. And then all I'll do with like things like LTC, Ethereum Classic, is if they take a dump for any reason, I'll just add to that bag or double it up and, you know, I'll be done. But pretty going pretty well. ETC, Litecoin, all of these things I'd mentioned like for the last couple of months are basically running now as expected. And you just have to be like a crypto native dork to understand how this works. And you have to have been around for a long time to realize that the crowd always comes. It doesn't matter what the fuck you think is going on with your coin. The crowd will always show up and they'll open up their little apps and they'll buy the things in the top 100. Regardless of what it is. And like even things like Bitcoin Cash and, you know, and all these things will run. I mean, like Litecoin is still showing up on CNBC tickers on TV, if you can imagine. So like you can imagine every sort of newbie is going to show up. They're going to buy things like BTC and Litecoin and whatever. So, they, you know, when people open up their apps, like, ooh, Bitcoin looks expensive. Oh, but Litecoin's only $104 or, you know, Ethereum looks expensive, but what's Ethereum Classic? Or I don't even know the difference between Ethereum and Ethereum Classic. I'll buy some. And it starts going up. So, yeah, the new buyers don't really know what's what and will typically buy a little bit of everything. And that happens every single season. Ask your new friends that come into crypto. You'll notice that they do the same thing. They just buy just random shit on the internet. And they don't really care what it is as long as it goes up. And I think right now everything is poised to sort of is just starting to break out. So Total 3, we talk about that a lot. Total 3, so if you go to CoinMarketCap or like TradingView, they have something called Total, Total 2, and Total 3. Total is basically the entire crypto market cap, all of the coins combined. Total 2 is basically all of the coins except Bitcoin. And Total 3 is all of the altcoins except for Bitcoin and Ethereum. So why would you care about this? It's because, so basically the whole crypto market cap is going to be largely moved by Ethereum and Bitcoin because those are the largest market cap components of that. If you want to know how microcaps are doing relative to that, you'd have to actually look at Total 3. And, you know, even that, some of that is already being comprised of by larger players like Solana and XRP and some of these bigger ones. So the microcap version of this hasn't moved nearly as much. So if you go down to the things that are like $15 billion and below, we're talking about things like Chainlink, we're talking about things like Litecoin, pretty much anything below the top 10 coins, you're basically talking about a bunch of stuff whose market caps have barely started to take off. And if we talk about kind of sort of FIB levels, you basically have the bottom of a price action, you have the top, and you have five FIB levels in between. So that's kind of like sort of like if you divide the price action between the bottom and the top, you know, by sort of like six sections, where Total 3 is right now is it's up in the sort of like fifth section, reaching its last FIB level resistance before hitting the all-time high. And some of that is comprised of like some early coins that have already pushed up already, like, for example, Solana, whose chart looks exactly like Total 3. And other things have been lagging. And you might be like, oh, my coin sucks. Why didn't I pick Solana? Blah, blah, blah. I would urge you to not chase the thing that's already run up. Like everything moves in a bull market. And I mean everything, every fucking shit coin in the bottom, you know, 5,000 coins or whatever starts taking a bid. You'll notice this if you go back to, you know, CoinMarketCap from 2020. Go to CoinGecko and just go pull up coins that have been around. And you'll notice that it didn't matter how stupid the coin was, what it did, what the fundamentals are. Remember, in a bull market, nobody gives a fuck about any of that. They don't care what the coin does. They don't care what the, you know, whatever. All they're looking for is number go up, and they're looking for coins that haven't moved up in value, and then everything pumps. So once you've sort of like realized that principle, then you can like ignore whatever stupid like research you've done, which is basically irrelevant here. It's like literally meaningless, except to say that like you just have to think clearly here and think like a total retard. You have to think like an absolute dimwit. What would a dimwit do when they open up an app, and what are they going to buy? They're just going to push buttons, erase everything you know about crypto. And what and how do you know that happens? Because if you go back to like basically, so where we are in the chart right now is approximately where we were in the chart like on in December of 2020. And right around then is when Bitcoin broke above high. And then quite literally things go straight up, like parabolic on log scale, meaning like hyper parabolic. And you're talking about things that go like, let's say total three back in December of 2020 was sitting at about 154 billion. And this again excludes Ethereum. And it tops out the first top at 967 billion was by May of 2021. So we're really talking about like 5 to 6 primo months of just ass kicking. And the reason why it won't be different this time is because there's a virality to how like people discover crypto. They hear their friends talking about it. Their friends talk to their friends. Their friends talk to their friends. You'll notice like rooms like this start getting bigger and bigger. Like sometimes like I'm doing some at night. There's like 100 people in here. That wasn't the case like 6 months ago. There'd be like 3 people in a crypto space. And everyone's like doing a, you know, doing a circle jerk and talking to each other. So really you're talking about like a lot more people are showing up, and all of them are telling their friends, and you just have gigantic amounts of like virality. There'll be videos on TikTok and whatever the fuck else, and everyone goes crazy. So that's starting to happen now, and it's not like things will just go sideways and wait for you, and maybe there'll be a pullback, and maybe there won't. There'll be little pullbacks and things. There'll be like 20 to 30% drops in coins, and then things will take off again, or 40 to 50% drops in coins. Just prepare for extraordinary volatility. Like even Total 3, take for example, in February of 2021, went from a market cap of 465 billion and dropped to 300 billion. If you were a new buyer, you know, of crypto at 450 billion and you bought your favorite coin, whatever the fuck that was, and you're a new buyer and it drops to 300 billion, you're like, you know, you're panicking and shit. Whereas like the people that know this space and have been in it long enough is like, fuck it, I'm just going to wait. It'll be fine. We have plenty of room to run. Same thing is true this time. Like you'll have extraordinary volatility. And that's where the term buy the fucking dip came from, or BTFD. You see that term used all the time by old school people. And really it's just like, you know, it's like a standard term that everyone uses, kind of a speakeasy where it's like in a bull market, it doesn't make sense to try to short things. Like unless you want to get wrecked, like the Bitcoin shorts that are getting wrecked now, which the simplest thing to do is buy and hold. And the simplest thing is to do is, so long as we're still early, you can add to your bags on dips if you'd like, if you're uncomfortable with buying too much at one time. I would argue that like at this point, vast majority of your bags that you care about, it's pretty much all in or get the fuck out. Like you don't know what you're doing. Because really like everything's really set to moon at this moment. And some of the bellwethers, remember I talked about this last 6 months, some of the bellwethers to know whether we're about to absolutely fucking go crazy is meme coins start taking off. Dogecoin in particular starts taking off. Coins that like people have sort of heard about or kind of like, you know, Bitcoin Lite, you know, Litecoins and whatever else, all the proof of work stuff starts to pop off. Then you know the randos are coming, the newbies are coming, and they're here to pump your bags. As that happens, something else happens. All the pro traders will start releasing liquidity from stock market or where the fuck they are, and they'll start taking on leverage to ride this ride up, and they're going to pump your spot bags. You don't have to pay leverage prices. You don't have to do any of that shit. You don't have to pay the fees. All you have to do is go down the market caps to lower market caps if you want to have a leverage trade on BTC. So that's why I buy things like Zephyr at very low market caps. Why? Because if BTC goes up, you know, it starts to run, then Zephyr is going to run a 10x while BTC might do a 2x, or Zephyr might do a 100x while BTC does a 10x, you know, whatever it is. So the point is, like, you're going to get very large movements on small market cap things. Again, it doesn't matter if it's my coin or your coin, doesn't really matter. Everything will go up. You just have to pick a decent looking chart, something that's consolidated or just hasn't run yet, and like grab that, and you can do well. So like, for example, what am I going to do with all these coins I just bought? So I bought Litecoin, at like, I don't know, I think 75 and 80. It's now at 104 within the last couple of weeks. And it's probably going to run to like, well, the next FIB level is 130. After that, it's like 169. And I think over the next 6 months, it will probably break its all-time high this time. And the reason for that is it's doing a parabolic. Litecoin bottoms have been parabolic, and its hash rate is absolutely astronomical. Like, people think that Litecoin is dead. It is not fucking dead. It is more secure than most things on the internet right now. So the reality is there's not that much Litecoin left to mine. And grand scheme of things is like supply is dwindling. They had halving last year, and all the miners are going to suddenly stop selling in order to ride up the bull market. I suspect this could be one of Litecoin's big years. That's why I'm just going to ride it literally to the very top. I don't care where that is. And I don't care where it drops from that. Like, I'm going to ride it all the way up. And the reason is because like the floor price of this thing is parabolic. And anyone with a brain can actually see this. That is kind of like, you know, has a lot of money who needs to have it like secure and have it go up. So like the Litecoin purchase I made, I'm fully expecting it to break all time high and reach something like 778 to 1000 or more. Depending on where BTC and everything goes, like this could be Litecoin just giga send year to 5,000 or whatever, who knows? But the point is like, whatever the price is going to be, it's going to be so high above where I bought it from. It doesn't even matter. You know, I can make any mistake in buying and selling and it won't make any difference because I'll be so far ahead. So I bought a pretty good bag of that. Just looking at how the chart looks. I got a bit of XMR for the same reason, good looking chart. Less liquidity for XMR net these days, so it's easy to pump it because it's not on Binance now. I think that's actually a bullish thing, not a bearish thing at this stage in the game. Ethereum Classic, this is a really interesting situation. So Ethereum Classic is still proof of work, and it's still running strong. It's got a good hash rate. People still use it, and it's just starting to pick up. It's at $37. Let me sort of draw these fibs real quick. For some reason, my fibs got deleted here. So Ethereum Classic is a really easy choice here. Again, sounds stupid. Like, why would you even be bothering with this thing? It's a dino coin, blah, blah, blah. It's because I know what I'm doing and you don't. That's why. This is that simple. And like, I have faded this in the past too. Like, I was the guy that didn't know what the fuck I was doing as well. And as far as Ethereum Classic's concerned, and I've learned not to fade this thing just because it's a legit still proof of work project and a lot of people still hold it. A lot of Ethereum whales from back in the day still love it and fuck around with it. And it doesn't have any FUD or issues of any kind. There's no bad news essentially for Ethereum Classic because it's just sheerly a price appreciation store of value coin, just like Litecoin and everything else now. So if you kind of pull up Ethereum Classic's fibs, well, first of all, let me just kind of describe to you, like, in 2020, what happened. In 2020, Ethereum Classic goes from, like, $4.76, or, like, 2021, $4.65 to $179. So explain that shit to me, right? Like, it doesn't make any fucking sense at all. But there you have it. It just goes into obnoxious gains, and that was... how much of a pump was that? That was, let me pull up the actual percentages here. That was like 3,700%, from that level, which is pretty good. And right now you're in that same boat where it's just starting its move. It's at $38 or whatever. It just basically came above its second FIB level from the bottom, which was at $35. The top was 179 for Ethereum Classic. The next levels up are 371, 542, and 935. Again, like the velocity of this move, like if you look at ETC's move, it didn't pump a second time. It didn't pump during the second Bitcoin pump of, in that season. It pumped early and then it just went berserk and then it basically bled out from there. So I think the most likely time it's going to pump would be now. And the time to get out would be like, sometime after it breaks high, something like that is my guesstimation. And I think from here, like one FIB level above prior high gives you a 10x right here. You can't ask for more than that, really. Like, that's pretty good. And it's like risk is low here because it consolidated at $24 and below for a good solid, like, you know, 2 years or something. So really, like, the floor for Ethereum Classic is about $24 at this stage, because we've had a breakout from the bear market. And therefore, like, this is really, really a relatively low risk position here. Again, don't take leverage and stuff. Like, you know, you do that shit, you know, the volatility's high, you get liquidated, that's on you. When I say low risk, I mean, like, for a spot buyer who is picking up something here, like, you know, I feel like the floor for Ethereum Classic would be like $24 and it's at 37. It just barely started to move, and ETH is going to break all-time high more than likely soon after Bitcoin now. It's almost there. And when that happens, ETC Classic is going to, like, most likely moon as people look for places to sort of, you know, pump their bags and jump into these things. So Ethereum Classic's, like, timeline here, from here, we're talking about, like, so last season, its big move was, like, let's say, oh, like, January 2021, and it peaks out by, like, May or so. So just gives you an idea of how long it takes to make these moves. You're going to have a couple of big pullbacks along the way, almost certainly. And by big, I mean, like, your bag is going to, like, have eye-popping, eye-bleeding type pullbacks. But you'd have to basically be able to withstand that, like, that drama in your head. And that's all based on your fucking psychology, and you have to sort of sort it out. But if you're talking about, you know, a 5 month move, we're talking about, like, into the summer is where, you know, you expect something like ETC to peak out. And this is true of Litecoin, Ethereum Classic, Doge. This is where the big moves will be made, typically is like 5 to 6 months. And then after that, it's not to say that the crypto bull market is over or whatever. Like, you'll have a lot of other things pop off. I think, like, the NFT shit and whatever is likely to pop off at that time. And you might have, like, the ability to cycle rotate into those things, because, again, people are going to look down the risk curve and they're going to say, what hasn't moved yet? Hey, I'm super rich off my Ethereum, off my Bitcoin, off my Link, or off my whatever, off my Zephyr. And they're going to say, what can I buy next that hasn't moved yet? And then typically that'll be whatever the fuck else is left over. And when you have people that are giga rich on various cryptos, they can pump NFTs and NFT projects and tokens and all that other shit can be pumped to high heaven, which happens every season. And that happens because people are crypto rich and they start getting degenerate with their money. And they'll be like, ooh, I made a 10x over here. I'm going to cycle all of that into something else. I'm going to 10x over here. And that's how people start thinking. They get really, really greedy. And that's why everything crashes all at once at the end, when the greed has gotten to, like, extreme levels. Right now, it's early enough, though, that I think this is actually not extreme greed. This is just the beginning. You just have to position yourself. Yeah, Zin, you had a question?
Are you holding in? Are you, like, buckling down in the ship for the halving next month? Are you, like, in the ship? Because I'm scared. I don't know why I'm scared this year.
No, I'm not scared at all this year. Like, last halving, like, so people talk about, okay, like, are people front-running the halving, and is there going to, like, sell the news type of event post-halving? I think all of that becomes mitigated substantially by the ETF inflows. So the situation, I think, is a little bit different this time. And we haven't had some kind of giga crisis in geopolitics or some shit like last time with, you know, COVID and Chinese miners getting kicked out and whatever. So there's not really anything obvious going on there. That's why I think this season, like, the halving was front run. I think it would have been if COVID hadn't. If you go back to the chart pre-COVID, like, during the COVID time, Bitcoin was on the rise, and I fully expected we were going to run at that time. And I was like, oh, fuck, COVID. And then, like, everything crashed, and, like, we got fucked. But does that have to happen again? I don't think so. And in fact, the PTSD of it happening last time makes it less likely people are taking on giga leverage this time, because they're worried about that sort of thing happening. And so typically each cycle happens a bit differently because the psychology from the previous cycle, like, causes so much trauma, mental trauma, that, like everyone's, like, in disbelief longer and stuff. So yeah, I think I'm not too worried about it. And even if it does dip, like, it's almost like, so what? I'm not on leverage or anything. It's like, you know, all of these things. Remember, like, right now it's March. You got 2 months till halving. And if you look at, like, the classic time period it takes for all these alts to run, it's about 5 to 6 months to their pico top, because it just takes that long for all the YouTube videos to get made, all the new people to show up and all that shit. Like, I think we've got time. And I don't think a lot of newbies are here yet. Like, some are, but most of the Twitter spaces are not loaded with newbies. part of how you know a lot of newbies have arrived is like you get way more brand new accounts. My follower account starts to skyrocket. You start seeing things like Dan over here with no PFP. Like you have people that have like new to Twitter and shit. You'll notice like when new folks are coming. Hey, Dan, what's going on?
Hi, Seffy.
Hey, you don't have a PFP because you're new or because like you just don't like them? Just quick question.
What do you mean exactly?
Your profile picture. You know how you don't have a picture on your Twitter account?
I put it out. Need to find a new one. I already asked you, I think, 3 weeks ago regarding I'm the guy from Germany regarding Zephyr protocol. Do you remember?
Yeah. No, I was just kidding. I was just trying to, so one of the ways you can gauge when all the newbies start showing up, though, is when a lot of new people start making Twitter accounts and they don't have PFPs. They're not just bots. They're actually talking on Twitter spaces, but they, that's like one of the bellwethers.
Anyway, yeah, for sure. I understand completely.
What right, just
I have a quick question. This is not in terms of price prediction, only expectation wise. If we are currently in the total two altcoin market with a value of 1.1 billion, I think something like this, what is your expectation? What we can reach in this cycle in maximum, so that we see what is how high we can go from now onwards.
For altcoins,
yeah, as far as like market excluding cap. Bitcoin, marketings.
Total two. I'm not sure. Like people have such wild, varying expectations. I think for starters, I think a rational target is Ethereum going to 2x what it was before would be sort of like very, very, very reasonable. Like beyond that, I have no idea. Like that's kind of how I think about it in my head. Trying to overpredict will make you like hold on to things too aggressively and maybe like not think clearly. But I think like a 2x of ETH would be rational. Beyond that, I think it's very possible, but I don't know. So, and then total three, like, you know, you have a lot more upside because total three, you have to realize like a lot of the coins that make up total three are only on their second cycle. Things like Solana, things like Avalanche or whatever, all these, you know, all these coins that kind of ran up last cycle. And total three coins, cycle two is usually one of the highest gainer cycles for most coins. It's like you had enough attention from the previous cycle. You have a bunch of old users. You have a bunch of people with bags. And those people tend to buy their own bags that they already know. They like there's this tendency to sort of like prefer the devil you know compared to researching new coins and devils that you don't know. So there isn't like people feel like they know the price action of their coin or they know the fundamentals of their coin. So so anything that's a cycle two asset, take for example like a Link or whatever, those are generally all going to pop off because you have those previous bag holder effects. You'll also get some resistance from sellers, but as you get into the top, so in Fib retracements, the closer you get to the top of the previous cycle, the less sellers there actually are because very few people actually bought the top, right? Like the reason why prices crash when things go up is because most people, what they do is they are selling the top, and a few people are buying the top, but there aren't very many buyers, which is why the price crashes so aggressively. Same in the same token, as the price goes up, the closer you get to the top, the less actual sellers there are because not very many people actually bought at that level anyway. So the resistance starts to mitigate once you're up to the fifth Fib level before high, which is where a lot of coins sort of are moving to now. So if like a lot of people, if they prefer confirmation trading, they like to wait till the last Fib level before, you know, the last level or like wait for, you know, high break so they can kind of jump in with confidence. If you're around long enough and you know this space, you don't fucking wait for the all-time high break. You basically know that the buyers are coming in your head. You have that like conviction and you get all of the shit that hasn't moved yet. And it's going to go like, hey, Bruce, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm just correcting your title.
Ah, you're going to fix it. I did predict all of this week, though. Did you notice that? Pretty good. Before you wreck my title. Like, I predicted that this weekend, the hardcore Bitcoin people are going to pump up the price, squeeze the shorts, and then make the ETF buyers buy high, which is essentially what happened. Like, last night, so all through Sunday night, because the stock market opens on Monday morning, U.S. time, at about, 9:30 Eastern. And right before that, it's like, that's when BTC ran, because, it just makes sense. People are front running the ETF buyers, essentially. And now all the proof of work shit's running. So Litecoin, Doge, and whatever else, all that shit's going to go up. Ethereum Classic, by the way, Bruce, get a bunch of that. That's an easy 10x, low risk. Really? Yeah, really.
What's like, what's the deal with it? Aren't folks that?
Ethereum Classic is the old proof of work chain that Ethereum used to be before. I just kind of mentioned, last cycle, it went from $5 to $170 within about 5 months after Bitcoin high break. And this cycle now, it's now only at its second fib level. It's $35 to $36. I bought it yesterday, $35. Mm. And I didn't go too crazy with it. It's a 10K buy, but I think that'll be an easy 10X with no added leverage or nothing. So the fib level above after prior high is about 370. And I think the odds of it getting there are quite good in that there's a ton of Ethereum Classic dorks that buy it because they're all old school Ethereum people and they're rich. So that's all you really didn't need to know. And when it starts going up, of course, all the miners start to hodl and whatever. And it's just the usual thing. So just like anything else, all of these proof of work things, Litecoin, Ethereum Classic, Monero, Doge, all the shit that everyone thinks is like a dino coin that's not going to go up. These are the things that are actually going to moon right now. Like within the next 3-4 months, I think will be the biggest moves for those things. And then other things like Zephyr that are on hardcore proof of work sites like Tradeogre and whatever, those are also going to run hard as people feel like they're, because a lot of those are proof of work dorks, right? So when they're proof of work coins like Bitcoin and whatever, they all start running. Then they're where can I make more money? And then they dump it into whatever proof of work coins are both popular and they think they're secured. And Zephyr right now is the most secure CPU mined coin on the mm-hmm. planet, essentially. So it's going to run with almost absolute conviction next. So all these people are just going to drop money down the risk curve and down the market cap curve as their larger market cap things moon. Because now they feel rich and they got to fucking do something with their money. It's really that simple. And ETH Classic was the last time it ran right about this time in the cycle where BTC and ETH are breaking high. And when Ethereum Classic really goes berserk is right as Ethereum Classic breaks high. The same way right now, Litecoin is popping off because Bitcoin's breaking high. ETH Classic will do that here in a minute when ETH breaks high, which looks like it's going to happen probably soon, maybe this week or something. So a lot of easy stuff in the market right now. It's like, It literally can't get easier. It's the whole reason why people waited 2 years fucking around. And the easiest time ever.
From a high level, what does your portfolio look like right now? If as a pie chart percentage breakdown.
So after removing the BTC, ETH and all the garbage I have that has been sitting around for, forever. So I largely just dumped those things into a spot. And I don't even touch all those things anymore. I like to play on the fringes of the internet, as you know, the largest, I think fundamentals based bag that I have, is Chainlink. And the reason is mostly because I can dump a lot of money into it without hesitation. It's not going to go to zero and has tons of upside. So it may not be the most immediate thing that pops off, but I can leave my bag there and I can basically 5 to 20x it or whatever the hell it's going to do. And I can be fine, without leverage and doing anything. So that's the largest. The one that's going to probably the second largest at this point is at Zephyr, where I have a lot of money in it, but at the same time, it's and I added a whole bunch, right? Below $30. So I bought that first day, but I bought a lot more afterwards as time went on. And the thing is, the reason I think that's interesting, obviously, for all the reasons I've mentioned, but because its market cap is really low. So that's my gamble for the 100x, essentially, where you know, all I have to do is wait, and it's proof of work. It's not going anywhere, and the team's anonymous and all that shit. And it's just like just a beautiful setup for just a like not only that, it's tax advantaged, right? Like long story short, so like a lot of people are going to notice this about it, and like it makes sense to dump all your winnings into Zephyr and let it ride. So no matter where it is going up, like the dips that you buy, you can just dump into Zephyr because like they just disappear into a black hole. So that's going to be, I think, a theme going forward as people realize this and like whales and such. It's like a perfect whale vehicle, essentially. Like there's no more perfect whale vehicle in crypto than that. Like is like
wait, what? You still have to. Are you saying what I think you're saying? You still have to report.
I'm saying what. No, you don't have to record anything. It's a black box. Like that's the thing. What's interesting about Zephyr is you can swap. You can like just to describe what it does within your wallet. You can swap. So let's say Zephyr right now is $25. Let's say I've got $1 million in it, and let's say it goes to $250, and now my bag is worth $10 million. Normally, you'd basically go and you'd like sell it on an exchange, right? And ooh, look at that. It's like you have a paper trail of where your money went because like it's like all blockchain, it's open. And what happens when you sell it is like now you owe, like in America at least, you owe somewhere between like $300,000 to $400,000 worth of taxes on that short-term capital gains or whatever, right? That's kind of typical. Whereas here within the wallet, the wallet itself is a black box. Nobody can see what's happening inside of it. And you can swap from Zephyr to ZSD. You don't need an exchange to go to a stable dollar. That's the magic of this thing. It's not like Luna or whatever where it's like, you know, everything's visible and you're fucked if, you know, people notice
Hold
it.
Hold on, Seth, here, it's all wait a second. If the IRS was listening to this, are you telling me they'd be like, yeah, he's right.
No, they can't do anything about it because you can only like, so yeah, what the basic still, bottom line, still, number one.
Wait, hold on. I'm just like, okay, but for everyone listening, you still have to report it to the IRS.
No, you don't. Nope, you don't.
Why
not? Don't. Because there's no, because only discoverable information that's provable is like something that can be actionable. So I'll give you an example of where this is true. But let me show you how it's legal. So there's ETFs in the stock market, right? There's mutual funds in the stock market. You go and buy the ETF like stock, right? Let's say the stock for solar panels or something. And there's like a basket of 10, you know, companies inside that ETF. Inside that ETF, like the assets are traded left and right. Like, you know, the ETF company trades them. You yourself are not materially making those trades, but someone's trading them in the background. But you don't have to pay taxes on all those trades if the ETF token goes up. If you hold the ETF token, it goes up. Think of your wallet with a privacy chain essentially as being a token. Your wallet itself is the token. There is nothing in the wallet because nothing inside can be proven one way or the other. Right, like nothing can be seen in Zephyr. And what was special about Zephyr is Monero, you had to go and sell it somewhere and therefore like create additional paper trail and go to fiat and whatever. But if you're just simply within your wallet and you're not moving back to fiat anytime soon, then you can move back and forth as many times as you want.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Yeah, that's always bothered me about crypto in general.
But Zephyr is the first one, though, that you can do this and go back and forth to stable dollar. It is truly the magic internet money I've been waiting for, like, my entire life. Like, it's that. It makes Luna UST look dumb by comparison because, like, this is private. Like, and this is over-collateralized, like, 4 or 5x, whatever. So the stable dollar is way, way more stable in the sense that like within the wallet, there's no concerns about being able to convert back to Zephyr and then selling if I want to at some place.
Oh, shit. Okay. Oh, I understand what you're saying
like
now. I thought you were being like, wink, wink, and the IRS can't do anything about it. I was like, why are you saying on a recording?
They really can't. Like, well,
okay, but that's not what you're saying. But that's not what you're saying. You're saying that.
Now, if I go into cash, if I go into cash at some point and I go back to my bank account and I show up with $10 million in my bank account, they're gonna be like, wait, where the fuck did you get this from? And so then you'll have to show like, okay, I got it as income off this ETF thing, you know, this coin or whatever, I don't know. I put it in this black box and out came this money.
I get so it. You're saying that you can accumulate safely and ride the wave as you want. without exactly. having to pay taxes on it each time, which is stupid, to be honest.
Which is the beauty of it. It's the benefit of why it's useful compared to men. And there's other vehicles like this in the stock market. It's not as if there's no such thing. So the reality is we didn't have a crypto where you could swap before, right? So that's the big thing. Anyway, so Zephyr is like, you know, a good size bag spot. And again, I don't have like leverage bags here. So this is just what I have spot. And then the next thing I have, like, I've got some Kujira. Why do I have like Kujira here? Because like the team is nice and the product is good and it's a low market cap, like 500 mil. I think I can 10x that relatively easily as numbers start to go up. And then like going down the things, I still have like a fair amount of Terra because I got the airdrop from Luna or whatever, you know, whatever Luna I have left there. I've got like, so, and then the stuff I added was this wacky ass shit like Dogecoin, Ethereum Classic and Litecoin, because I feel like they're just free money. I've got a bunch of little bitty things like some Dimension and this and that that I have from like, you know, that I bought from the very beginning, some Monero. I bought some Blur yesterday, which is like the NFT platform on Ethereum. And I bought that because like, you know, it's only like a billion market cap. And as the retards start showing up, they're going to want tons of NFTs and things. And they'll run up the price of Blur just like anything else. And I figured that's an easy 10x. I just bought a little bit of that. I have like a bunch of random things that sit around, but the big bags are just mainly Chainlink. Zephyr is where the biggest ones are. But I think like the returns will be quite high on my LTC and my Ethereum Classic bags. And what's going to happen is those are going to go green, and I'll be ahead in them enough that if I decide, you know what, like there's a better opportunity out there during the bull market, I can use that as a trading bag to sell them and buy some other shit that comes out or whatever. So once you make like a 5 or 10x on something, you can play video games with that money for the like rest of the decade, right? So like the beauty there is to have a few bags that are separate from my main ones. Why? Because Chainlink, if I sell it, I'm going to pay taxes. And that tax bill is going to be ginormous. So I don't want to do that. But at the same time, Chainlink's the one that if I want to sell it at some point to spend, I'm going to pay the taxes and it just stays in my sort of like, you know, main account or whatever. And I'll just sort of exit that when I feel like it, sell it when I feel like it and use it for whatever I want. So I keep it like, I don't want to trade that because a lot of my Chainlink is going to be in long-term capital gains by the time the bull market, like selling time comes. I don't have to pay much taxes on it. It's only like 20% at that point. And that's the benefit there. And I don't want to touch that bag. I can add to it, but I don't want to sell anything because it's going to ruin my long-term positions in terms of taxation. That's why like finding other shit that's going to 10x also, like Ethereum Classic and Dogecoin or whatever, is helpful, because then I can sell those without hesitation. I'll pay the short-term capital gains, who gives a shit, because the bags are not as big. But then like I can use that to trade or something if I have extra money coming in. So I always like speculate on new things with money I've already made from previous things. I don't add too much new money into the market from my personal money and whatever. So that's kind of the idea. Dan, you had a comment or something?
Yeah, quick question. If you swap your Zephyr in CSD, you need to how to get it on your bank account? You need to swap it in USDT afterwards, right?
Because what you can do is if you're in ZSD,
let me handle this one. You go by vouchers. it's your little voucher fund. You go to bidali.com or Coinsbee and you buy a voucher.
All right, the newbies are coming. Dan, what you can do is if you swap into ZSD, you can always swap back to Zephyr at any price of Zephyr to go and sell it, right? Because you're basically a stable dollar, so like it doesn't really matter when you swap backwards.
Here's how I believe you should see it. You have your conventional crypto holdings that can be seen. Everything is transparent. Eventually, governments or whoever wants to find what you have can, because the beauty of the blockchain is that it is perfectly transparent, right? It is not only freedom, but it is also like a surveillance heaven. So therefore, one should keep around 5% of their holdings or less in ZEF or ZUSD. And they should use that exclusively as a backup fund in the case of a horrible divorce, in the case of nuclear holocaust, in the case of any kind of emergencies, and also as like an indulgent side spending route where you can buy vouchers infinitely without government detection.
Yeah, and not only that, but ZephyrSwap and SarayDex and some of these things are working on making it possible to convert ZSD and Zephyr to other shit that is fungible and that you can spend in places. Like, Bruce, like you should probably get an account on Travala.com to go traveling. So what you do is you basically send this over to, you'll use ZephyrSwap or something, and you'll swap it to, let's say, Tether or Bitcoin or something, send it to Travala. Now you can go on like trips and whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody's checking what you're spending on Travala, basically.
There are sites now that accept thousands of voucher things. Like I exclusively, most of my traveling over the last year that I've done like on land has been going through a site called Coinsbee and a site called Bidali. And I can buy $2,000 travel vouchers every time. And if you swap, say, ZEF into some other stablecoin and then send it to a voucher site, nobody will ever know. Like, it's completely out of the system.
Okay, so, for example, in Germany, we have maybe by end of the year or beginning of next year a new regulation, and in Europe as well, the MiCA regulation. And, for example, if you want to use your gains for investing in next bull run, it's very hard to invest new money because every 1,000 euros you need to provide the bank that this money comes from you and that everything is okay with this money. So it's also a possibility after a bull run to save your money or a part of your money in CSD and convert it afterwards for on-ramp, for example, on this balance sheet, right?
Yeah, I think the amount should be like the amount you should bother with this is not just to speculate, but just like at what level is it useful to you? Like how much, like if ZEF were to go up 10x from here, which is reasonable, by the way, like
yeah, for sure,
a reasonable target, and you swap to ZSD or whatever, how much of that would be useful to you? Like you have to move all of that and exit from it. It doesn't make sense to have a too big of a bag because then the thing is like, well, you know, like in Europe or whatever, you're going to have trouble. I don't know. How much liquidity is there going to be on DEXs and, you know, whatever. I don't know. So, you know, like as these things grow, though, you have more options. The other thing you can do, by the way, is you can use existing DEXs, like, for example, smaller ones like Trade Ogre and stuff. Plenty of like small fringe DEXs and sexes that don't have like, you know, standard KYC stuff. And they have some of these things. And what you can do is you can, if you make a new account on those places, there's no paper trail either because you're sending a private coin out to those. So anything that goes through a privacy like wallet essentially disappears fundamentally. Anyway, so yeah, there's different tricks and trades. But yeah, it's going to become harder in the future. So, and it's also harder in the future because like, let's say now it's great because like we're in a bull market and, you know, maybe your Zephyr is going to 10x or 20x or whatever it is. And you get some gains out of it. Now, the problem, if you did this like in a bear market or something, is not only are you taking some of the risk of like various, what if I can't exit somewhere or whatever, but you're also taking the risk of like, you're not even getting the gains too. Like, so it makes sense now more than it does later. So anyway, just, you know, because later the utility of the privacy stack is good, but it's not as cool as having your price appreciation on top of that. It's like you have your gravy and the, you know, you have like the whipped cream and the cherry on top of the pie or whatever. This is like the right time for that. So anyway, it's an interesting thing. And that, like, but I do have quite a few things that, you know, for tax purposes, tax slots, I'll buy different things, not the main bag that I want to hold long term, because like if I want to sell some things without hesitation, I want to do so with like some new bags that doesn't touch my old tax slot. So yeah, you don't have to worry about all this shit if you don't pay much taxes anyway. But if you have to worry about all that, then it gets, yeah, it's to be, because all that shit's being surveilled a lot more, both in US and Europe this year and next year.
FBI.
So you don't want to take
CIA.
You don't want to take too many risks. Yeah. Yeah, all the organizations. Yeah, you don't want to take those risks as far as you
MI5.
It's mainly the tax
Mossad
people, yeah. MI5.
Guys, thanks a lot for your explanations.
Everyone's chasing Bruce. That's the
problem.
Remember,
crypto has no intrinsic value. It's all a bunch of piglets.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone says something, it's like, oh, I don't know. I just bought this thing and stuck it in this wallet. I don't know what it does.
You have to know when to get in. You have to know when to get out. That's the real deal about it.
Yeah. The other thing is, then, like you were asking, the Fifth Amendment states you can't actually self-incriminate yourself. So it doesn't really matter. Like, if there's no actual record of what I did in my brain.
What?
For example, you can't self-incriminate yourself.
What do you mean?
Fifth Amendment.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You can't be forced to testify against yourself.
If they hold on,
and you're the only one that knows the contents of your Zephyr.
I was confused, and now we're on the same page with the Zeph thing. But now you've lost me again. Like, what the fuck are you talking? If I kill Coach, and I go onto a Twitter space, I say I killed Coach Bruce. I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that.
You've self-incriminated yourself. Now you have self-incriminated.
Yeah, that's
yourself.
Why I'm saying. Wait. So what are you what are you talking about?
What I'm saying is if I don't actually say what happens in my wallet, and it can't be seen by anybody, then I can't be forced to say what happened in my wallet.
You know
either.
What I think is happening here?
In the US.
I think I've spent too much time in here, and you know that I'm a little autistic, and now you're just just like toying with it.
Yeah, if you go and start claiming you murdered someone in a public space, then yeah, you're going to jail.
Zintani, have you ever taken the autism test? It's a really interesting test.
I did. I took it. I've taken it many times.
But which one? Because I'm talking about the social iron intelligence recognition test.
Yeah. So actually, I've gone in and I've been tested many, many times because I keep saying, like, I'm pretty sure I'm autistic. And I keep going to different people, and each time it turns out I'm not. And I'm actually in the top percentile for facial recognition. That's, I think, what offsets the, like, I can see people's emotions around me really, really, really well. But I took the one recently. I can't remember what it's called. RAS.
So do you think you think it's like more in the audio domain that you're more autistic? And
that is where maybe. I'm the most autistic is like, well, there's like two things. It's like, so I took the test again and it says I'm sus, essentially. It's like, I'm not autistic enough to be autistic. But I'm just barely there, like right next to where you'd get a diagnosis.
Yeah, you're right at the threshold.
It makes me upset when, like, certain things make me upset more than other people I've noticed. And I hyperfixate on things. Like, if someone walks in here and is like, 2 + 2 = 5, period. I will, like, genuinely get angry. And they'll, like, try to change the subject. Yeah. I'm like, no, hold on. We need to fix this issue first. So that's where I...
Yeah, yeah. You do get hung up pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I think it's...
Certain things.
But, Zephy, it's because it's, like, I'm not, like... It's because I'm a curious person. I want to know what's going on. Like, if I'm not understanding something, I want to like hash it out until it's understood.
Yeah, it's like I sense that you care about what is the truth ultimately.
Yeah,
it's like and if you feel like you haven't reached what you think is the truth, then it worries you. It's like it's just grating on you, basically.
Well, remember one guy who was like, yeah, my living room is 18,000 square feet or whatever. It was like crazy. Or 1,000 square feet. And I was like, I couldn't let it go. But then it turned out like that wasn't the case. It was the whole house. Right? It's like shit like that. I can't let it go until I
All I was pointing out is like, if we had a space like this and we talk about all the different ways like a serial killer could theoretically kill a person, that's technically not illegal. Like that's just normal conversation. If you go and like, you know, describe with an excruciating detail all the people that you just killed or something, that's a different story. And like that, you're probably going to a prosecutor is going to use that to try to put you in jail. Right. Like in most countries and stuff. And then the Fifth Amendment pretty much says, like, let's say someone claimed that you did something, you can't be forced to testify against yourself. Someone else has to create the evidence, find the evidence for it. They can't, like, in fact, many criminals and such don't even take the stand, as it were, in a court for this reason. So if you have like a closed black box, you know, ledger of some kind, you could do all sorts of stuff in it in theory, but like maybe I did and maybe I didn't, but you couldn't prove it anyway. So there's nothing to prove. So there's nothing to actually prosecute on or something like that. Now, at the same time, if I show up with my $10 million, $100 million at the bank and go, hey, by the way, like they're going to be like, where'd this come from? The IRS is going to want to know, like, or whoever's going to want to know, wait, did you commit crime for this? Like, people don't usually show up with this amount of money, you know, in the bank. Like, where'd that come from? You'd have to prove where it's from. If you don't, again, like, then you're going to be like bookmarked as suspect of doing something. You would have to pay the taxes, by the way, and it wouldn't be on capital gains. You'd have to pay it as income, which is actually higher than capital gains. So if I just show up with $100 million and I said, oh, I made it in crypto somewhere somehow on Ox.fun or whatever, and I just showed up and I don't have a record of the like dealings inside of this black box, then
hold on. Like you're taking something that, from what I understand, is totally legal, and it's almost like you're trying to sound as sus as possible about it. Like, what is going on?
It's not illegal, right?
To go into the stablecoin and back into, like, does the IRS?
No, it's not.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's on the same platform, right? Or?
Right.
Okay. So
it's not even a question of platform. It's like, it's not illegal to do it, period. Like, just go back and forth and trade a capital asset.
Oh, isn't it? I've been doing it all wrong.
To the IRS?
What's that? But it's the question of what has to be reported, right? That's the main
thing. You got to imagine.
Technically speaking, all transactions should be
reported. Okay, but are you saying you don't have to report it because they can't, because they wouldn't know, aha, like, or are you saying like...
Yeah, it's that simple.
No,
yes.
Hold on. Okay.
Yep, it's that simple.
Wait. But you still, okay.
What are you, a little rule follower?
Yeah, absolutely. With fucking taxes, yes. I pay my fucking taxes.
Why?
It makes me really upset.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get in trouble. Why? Because I don't want to go to jail.
Nobody here gets in trouble.
I'm literally going to Utah this week to give them my fucking fingerprints for theft of library materials, and it's a misdemeanor. I do not want serious.
You got caught for this. You're just a fucking bad criminal. This is like, Jesus Christ! You're getting like tracked down across county lines and state lines for a library book. It's like you're gonna go to federal prison.
I wish I could have recorded it. It's actually illegal. I wanted to record it and post it. He was so mean to me. He was so serious about this fucking library book. I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm like actually scared. I could go to jail. I genuinely could go to jail. This is not a meme. So, yeah.
What is this book worth?
They're asking for 1600 right now.
But what is the book?
I don't know. No one has told me what book it is, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like a small claims court thing. A lawyer would get you off of this immediately. Like, this,
yeah, that's what I thought. But everyone also told me, yeah, at your hearing, the judge is going to throw out the case and it's going to be a big meme. Everyone told me that. Every lawyer told me that. And guess what? No, he actually was really fucking. He was like, you broke the law. You received a notice. You received a notice for 30 days and you broke the law. And I asked him, I was like, hold on. Because he asked me, like, do you want a lawyer or not? I was like, well, it depends on what I'm being charged with. Like, am I being charged with intentionally stealing or forgetting to return it? He's like, you need to ask a lawyer that question. So I'm like, oh, okay, what? It doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm asking you if I need a lawyer and you're telling me I need to ask a lawyer if I need a lawyer. Like, what?
Yeah, it's all a big scam. Yeah, but like, the library book thing, that's hilarious.
It's
like
not,
the smarter I'm thing would have been to do is scared. Walk into the library and fucking steal the library book normally. You'd have less trouble.
I'm literally terrified because I'm just ADHD. Like, I'm not a criminal. I'm not a bad person. I'm just like retarded.
What if you were a criminal? How would that feel?
Well, they think I am, and I don't understand how that's even possible. I've always been a rule follower. I've always been friends with people that break the rules. But I don't. I kind of just watch them. I don't involve myself.
Another general concept, by the way, is if you're paying a fuck ton of taxes anyway, no one's going to notice your fucking Zephyr bag or whatever. Like, no one gives a shit about these, like, immaterial things. So that's another factor as well. Like, it depends on, like, what you're doing.
Why are you saying these very sus things? Like, why are you saying these things in a way that's like...
I'm trying to point out the bull case for Zephyr and why people are going to want it. That was all I'm saying.
So,
and by the way, people all over the world are going to want this, not just people that's sitting in America.
You're saying it in the most... Sefi, let's say you do get doxxed one day. You know, people get paid to go to the IRS.
He never says how much he has.
Yeah, I may not have any as far as you're concerned. Like, who knows?
It's like we also do crypto theater. Like, I often talk about things I don't own. Sefi often like goes on a show rant just because he enjoys it.
Yeah, like we have all sorts of stuff that we don't know when we talk about. Yeah,
I feel like men do this because men like get bored and they just want like that spice.
That's all this whole space is. It's like a manifestation of boredom.
Yeah.
Yep.
And loneliness. And then we're trying to convert one kind of energy into another. So loneliness plus boredom equals hopefully a small return on our finances.
I'm currently in West fucking Virginia. I am both lonely and bored.
Yep. I think I've always been lonely and bored to some degree.
Yeah.
Just because of like incompatibility with the human race. Like, I'm not in the middle of nowhere at all. I'm in the middle of like a lot of people, but still cannot connect. Like, I'll look at them and I'll go, hello? 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 Then, like, I just can't get to the next, like, level.
A nice thing is there's actually, like, there's trees here, but it's been raining for about 5 days straight, which is nice.
Have you taken the autism test, Coach?
Yeah, I've taken all of them. I've tested myself comprehensively. I know all of the disorders I have. Why?
Well, you asked me, so I'm just asking you, what is it called? RAS, I think, is the one I just took. Or what is it called?
The good one, the facial expressions one, is called the RMET, a reading the mind's eye test.
That's the one that I score in the top percent. Like, I'm even better than neurotypical people.
What, do you know what your score was exactly?
I was in the top percentile. I was in the top percentile.
It's score out of 36. Do you remember what it was?
It must have been 36 then, right?
No, not entirely. That's like exceptionally high.
That's literally what they said. They're like, you're not autistic. I was like, yes, I fucking am. And they're like, you score better than neurotypical people score. You're in the top percentile.
I don't know. Was this administered in person or was it?
Yes. Yes. So this is the one where I went to a neurologist because I'd already, these people laugh at me when I say like, I think I'm autistic. Like they laugh at me and they're like, you're not autistic. I'm like, yes, I fucking am. Like everyone I've ever dated says I'm autistic. It like laughs at me. But so this person also hooked me up and like looked at my brain. So we did a bunch of stuff, and he told me I'm not autistic. Two.
Mohammed, what's up, man? Are you
autistic? I was like almost like forgetting what I was trying to ask because Zin is here. So I was like, oh, please, yeah, guys,
Zin, you mesmerized him. He's so in love with you that he doesn't even know what he was going to say.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah.
So the question is that, Seth, like, what is the, like, how, like, you said, like, we can convert, like, ZEF to ZSD. So what is the platform we can use for that? And the other question is that...
You don't need a platform. You just do it in your wallet.
So, like, I have...
It's part of the protocol.
If I have, my ZEF into a DEX, then...
Yeah, you can do the same thing. You can convert it to whatever, like whatever the DEX has. in terms of points.
Okay, so MXC does not have ZSD, I think so.
No, but you can convert it back to ZEF to do that, or you can go to like some of the smaller exchanges and have ZSD. Like no KYC and TradeOger and different things have it. I don't remember which one. 7Cs, I think.
By the way, interruption.
Wait.
Let me talk to everyone first. If anyone would like to take this autism test that I've been talking about, and maybe Zintani has been talking about too, then it is pinned at the top. It is a very quick test. It takes 5 minutes. The whole design of the test is that you look at a series of eyes of different people, different ages and genders, and you have to identify the emotion, and then you select the emotion, like multiple choice. And at the end, it spits out a result and tells you whether you're autistic or not. It's probably the most well-validated gold standard test on autism there is right now. Most other tests rely on a degree of like self-assessment, and people tend to lie or appeal to their own self-image and things. Like somebody might want to believe they are extroverted, or might want to believe they are a certain way when they're in fact not. Whereas this test, it actually shows you who you are in a way where you can't really fraud it easily.
Then I didn't lie. Yeah, this is the one I took, I'm pretty sure. Because I was like Googling it after you said it. I was like, is it the same one?
Take it again.
I know there were a series of, yeah, I'll take it again. I'll take it again. We'll see.
The only thing to know about this test is that some of the words or adjectives are fairly obscure. Therefore, if you're a non-native English speaker, you can look them up, because it's not a vocabulary test. It's a social eye intelligence reading test. So if you come across an English word which you don't understand, just look it up. It's no problem.
We should all take it.
How many points are on this test?
It's 30,
it's right?
36 total. 30. The average for non-college students is around 27. The average for college students is around, college grads is around 28. And then Asperger's.
I think I got what? What did I get on this thing?
I think like you got about 25.
29 or something. Was it 25, 29, I thought? Something like that. 25 to 29.
I think you were a bit lower than average, if I remember.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I think I was like right in the middle of the road or something.
You were a bit lower. I typically can predict people very accurately, which is quite interesting as well.
You can predict how autistic people are?
Yeah, as in if anyone takes this test and I know them reasonably well, I can predict their score within like 1 or 2 points.
All right, predict mine before I finish.
Well, you have like an honesty issue, so I'm not sure.
Sintani's a counterintelligence agent. Like she has so much potential for being counterintelligence. It's ridiculous. She's psyoping all these NFT communities like crazy.
Okay, I'm not lying about going in and telling these people I think I'm autistic, and every single time they say I'm not.
You have hundreds of people who don't know whether you're 15 or whether you're 50-year-old woman with 4 kids.
I'm 43. And I just had a miscarriage, so I don't appreciate you bringing that up.
Shouldn't have partied at ETS Denver.
Time's running out, Zen. Yeah. I can't believe he brought it up. I can't believe he brought that up.
Let's go.
This is my friend who was on Crypto Banter earlier, Seffi.
Bro, I know Zintani. I was in one of her chats like years ago. She's a G.
We're all kind of scared of her.
Yeah, she's crazy. She's crazy.
That's not true. Don't say we're all scared.
I think okay, 95% of us are frightened of you.
No, just say I'm a little pussy bitch and I am scared.
Hands up if you're scared of this woman.
You're influencing people to be scared.
Nah. I did one of those autistic tests. I did one of those and I passed by 1 point. and the test said you should go to a professional.
What does pass mean?
You passed. Like passing the driving test.
No, it was one of those eyes, and I was like, oh, look at this girl. Yeah, she's probably horny. And then when it showed the full picture, she was like afraid to die.
Terrified.
What the fuck? Bro, I have no idea what the fuck was going on.
Are you Indian by any chance? Where are you from? You don't sound Indian to me.
No, sir. I'm not Indian. I'm Portuguese. I'm not from India. No, I'm Portuguese. But yeah, I'm not Indian at all. It's just that my mom's black and my dad's white, sort of like Jewish white, and so I'm a weird mix.
This was the test that I took, but I think where he said I was in the top percentile of this, it was like this and other things. It was like a whole EQ section.
Maybe. So, but it's like percentile isn't score as well. Like you have to do really, really well to get top. But I would predict your score on this might be about 30.
So you don't think I'm autistic?
I guess I'm influenced by what you said, though, if you're really adamant.
I think the DSM's a wreck. I mean, let's face it. They're struggling. They're always changing their minds and adding shit. And I think there's something, like when I say that I'm autism adjacent, I'm really frustrated because I genuinely think I have a diagnosis that like just isn't termed yet. And I genuinely think it is autism adjacent. It's not autism, but it's like...
No, I think everyone... Guys, I think everyone will agree with that. Yeah.
I'm doing the test right now. What the fuck? How am I supposed to know anything, bro?
Okay, so when somebody who's not autistic does that test, everything is obvious.
How to read the result?
What?
Because there's an average score and there's deviations, right?
At the end, it does outline the meaning of the test. But essentially, if you score above, if you score 27, your average in the population, if you score below around 22, 21, you probably have Asperger's. And if you score below around 15, then you probably have like proper autism.
Okay, so if you're above like above 27, it's...
If you're above 27, you're above 50% of the population. And if you're above like...
Then you're supposedly normal.
Yeah.
And there's interesting like implications to the test too, in the sense that like, one, the so
hello?
We do a lot more
communication
through facial expression. Can you hear me? Like, we do a lot more expression through our facial, like, we communicate to others with our facial expressions and body language a lot more than we think we do. And on top of that, we receive a lot more information from other people from facial expressions than we might think we do. However, like that reception of that information is highly variable in that, you know, like what Bruce is saying is if you tend to score really high on this thing, your ability to read others' faces for emotion is really, really good. And then there's a spectrum all the way down to terrible, where there's like some people that can quite literally not have any clue the difference between whether it's an expression of fear or love or whatever, like it's completely clueless. And then there's like everything in between. And like, there's a subtlety to this in that, like there's an ease of this too. Like for the person that does it really well, it's like, it's just pretty obvious that like what the actual test
obvious
answers are.
Gut. Yeah.
It's like, you can just, it's like doing 2 + 2, 3 + 3. You can basically go through like a test and you know for sure you're getting the right answer as you're doing it.
Yep.
Whereas like when I was doing it, I was like, I don't know, this one's kind of a maybe, I don't know. Like, you know, I could tell that like I wasn't really sure on the eye test in particular.
It's very interesting.
And so I could tell I was missing the ability to see this. But but at the same time, I'm knowledgeable enough to understand, like I can self-analyze and self-reflect and say, hey, look, I'm not as good as this as I thought I might have been. You know, and maybe I underappreciated how much like can be sent to someone through facial expression than I otherwise would have known. Mm. So you can learn something about yourself a little bit, but also learn something about like other people and what you might be missing by kind of realizing, hey, wait a minute, like some half the cases or whatever, I'm not able to fully like grasp what the eyes are telling me and whatnot.
Yeah. There's also
at the same time, Bruce, there could be an alternative problem too. Like if you score super high on this thing, there can be people that can be completely irrational about and be swayed excessively by those messages and not be objective either. So that could be the contrary of that. Like, it's not that if you just score perfectly on this thing, it's like life is perfect for you.
Well, I mean like capacity to read emotions isn't the same as reacting to them necessarily. But there were interesting sub variations of this test, and I think it displays it at the end. For instance, people have taken this test where they had absolute discernment in reading positive emotions but not negative. And other people have taken the test where they had absolute discernment in reading negative emotions but not positive. And it sort of makes you wonder, like, what is actually optimal? Like, is it, imagine if you could just not see negativity. Like, that would be kind of cool.
You're just, it's weird. The other thing too is I wonder what it says about, like, let's say I score, like, you know, in the middle of this thing, and what does it say about my facial expressions? Do I actually express less emotion in my expressions that I'm sending to someone else if I am weaker at reading them also? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you might see some sort of like one-to-one correlation thing.
There's I remember studying this like in the psychology courses that I've taken, because like my main interest was neuroscience, but you have to take some psychology.
When did you take them?
When
did you take them?
Take what? I'm talking about studying.
Courses. Yeah.
Oh, when did I take the courses? Yeah. Years ago.
How many? Pull up that calculator.
This little interrogator
back
over
in
here.
The 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, like a toddler. So, nice.
So people that are good at reading emotions can be are hypersensitive to negative emotions if they grew up in places where like abusive households or whatever, because they have to be hyper aware of people around them, and this creates like the people pleaser type of person. So it like even if you're very good at reading emotions, it can bring very negative things to you, because if you've ever dated a woman, you understand this, or at least like I've experienced this, is like sometimes it's suffocating to date a woman because they always know what you're thinking. And sometimes you really are thinking something like bad, and they're like, what are you thinking about? And you're like, nothing. Because even if you have like a bad thought, it's not like it's bad enough that you want to say it, right? And that can be really suffocating and annoying to be around all the time.
Interesting. So like the people around you, like, that know you well are already reading your mind and know kind of like, you're like, hey, I don't want you to know that. But you're like, you're reading my mind.
Like the one thing I don't like about dating women. It is like the biggest downfall. And when I really started getting into relationships with women, I realized like I did this to men all the time. I always did that. As soon as I saw something on their face, I'm like, what are you thinking about? And they'd be like, nothing. And I'd be like, I know you're lying to me. Tell me what you're thinking about. And then I finally realize how suffocating that really is.
Hey, doctors, what does 20 mean?
It means you're most likely Asperger's syndrome.
It's not that bad.
No, unless you struggled with the words and you're not great with English or whatever.
No, I understand the words.
Okay.
Honestly thought I was going to score like 0 because I have no... Maybe some of those were luck. I don't know. I swear to God, I was like very confused.
Yeah, typically below 22, below 21 is like you likely have Asperger's, as in like mild autism, like nothing crazy, just like you fucking love number plates and things.
Okay.
It means you're like average in crypto. That's basically what it means.
So to be great in crypto, what do I need?
Actually, I'm not sure. I think to be great in crypto, you probably need some sense of like social dynamics and also some autism. So probably you're like optimal for that. In like 20, when was it? Like a year and a half ago or so, maybe more now. I started a fake DAO and I started to recruit people, and the recruitment test was this test. And I managed to survey about 300 people in the old Luna community exclusively. And the average score was around 21. Like the average in crypto is actually Asperger's syndrome. like pretty mild autism. It's average. Like, we all joke that everyone in crypto is autistic, but I actually tested it and they actually are.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like being a libertarian is being like Asperger's light.
Can you get late term autism? Because I remember taking this and it was so easy and I got a perfect score. And now I'm like struggling.
Yeah, there is something to be said about what Gustavo just said. It's basically like that libertarian slash autism light is probably a similar thing, because to be a libertarian, you pretty much have to say, okay, you leave me alone, I'm going to leave you the fuck alone. And that includes things like, for example, let's say you have a neighborhood and, you know, your neighbors are not cutting their lawn appropriately, or maybe they left a dead car on the front lawn and you're like, oh shit, like, you're ruining the property value of my house by doing this. And so a libertarian mindset individual is like, fuck it, who cares? I'm not going to bother them. They're not bothering me. That's their yard. They can junk up their yard. They can do drugs in their yard. They can do whatever the fuck they want. But there is something unusual about that, a militant libertarian, because, you know, if you take that to the nth degree, you'll realize eventually there's going to be like ants and roaches crawling into your house. It's not going to go well. And it is actually going to fuck up your life eventually. Whereas it's like the people that really, really care about what everyone else thinks has one, like a, you know, ardent statist or a socialist or something, has one set of ideals. Yet, like, on the other hand, an ardent, you know, like hyper-religious, like right-wing person has a different set of ideals. Interesting thing is, like, nature left all these different phenotypes intact. I think that's the most interesting part of it. It's like a ratio of like 40-40. 20 or like, you know, 45-45-10, something like that, left, right, libertarian. And that work is really interesting, like Jonathan Haidt's stuff. And I think that goes with some of our phenotypes in terms of behavior as well. But like, yeah, this interesting thing that like libertarian slash autism light and people who tend to like decentralized crypto things all sort of melds into a certain type of group is not surprising at all.
I fucking love crypto, bro. I love this industry.
Coach, what was your guess for me?
I guess 30.
That's 32. You did pretty good. I thought I was expecting a really bad score because I was really not sure. It says it's very high score.
But you have to post it publicly to prove it.
You don't believe me? Oh yeah, you think let me take a screenshot.
Like a great deal of people, maybe 5% of people tried to fraud it when they did the original submission to me for my fake DAO, which was funny as well. And the reason I'd find out is because their score said a certain thing. And then below, the like percentile said a certain thing. And because I had administered about 400 of these, I knew the percentiles off by heart. So like, I'd call them out. I'd be like, what are you doing trying to fake me? Why are you trying to ruin the integrity of this DAO by getting in fake? And then they'd admit to it and stuff.
Although Bruce, it was very helpful to find out who is real and who isn't too. Like, who's going to lie?
Yeah.
When given the chance.
It's funny to confront them as well about this fake test for a fake DAO.
I do have a question. If you can guess someone else's autism test result, does that make you very, very autistic or actually very not autistic?
No, it means you're very not autistic. Typically with these things, it's sort of like something like intelligence, right? Like if you take IQ and regardless of the validity of that measure or whatever, if you take IQ, probably somebody who's very smart can more or less peg someone who's less smart, right? If somebody has like 130 IQ, they can probably tell who's like 120, who's 110, who's 100, who's 90, who's 80 or whatever. Whereas if somebody has like 100 IQ or 80 IQ, they probably struggle to peg whether somebody is like 110, 120, 130, right? It's just like, you can't really model it. And as a result, all the time you get really dumb people thinking like pretty average people are intelligent, just on the basis of like spewing weird facts or something. Like people aren't very good at this stuff. If you look upwards, you can't really tell. But if you look downwards, you can. I think it's the same with social stuff. Somebody who's like very competent at this stuff can have a good sense of it.
Do you guys believe in the validity of the IQ test?
I mean, like what for? Good. I mean, it indicates a lot of stuff and it's interesting for sure. Yeah.
It tells you.
Did you guys see Nassim Taleb's breakdown of the IQ test? I thought it was really interesting the way he sort of like broke it down and said it was mostly not that relevant. Kind of made me change a little bit my mind on it.
Well, I mean, we know that it's relevant in certain cases. It's not, I don't like when people, like I've been in high IQ, like jerk off clubs before and they're cringe. Like that's not the way to go either. It's not everything, but it's definitely useful. If it wasn't useful, we wouldn't use it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what the question is. It has some meaning. It also feels like if you're above a certain threshold, then you're fairly uncapped in whatever you do. And beyond that, like, who cares? Like, it's down to a lot of things. Like, I was very high level in chess. And one of the interesting things is, like, there's quite a variation of like, raw intelligence in chess. And the people who seem to go the furthest aren't necessarily doing so on the basis of their intelligence, but in fact, just their like raw compulsiveness. Like they're the people who are willing to sit there and study all day and learn openings and do all these things.
And Bruce, some of the things like I think become objectively obvious that the IQ test is useful in that, like an illustrative point is if you take reaction time, for example, or you take something like the ability to form a 3D object in your head and rotate it and whatnot, you know, rotating and these things. Like clearly, if you are a sculptor and you can't do like 3D like rotation of an object in your head, your ability to take a piece of wood and turn it into a sculpture may be quite difficult. Or like if you have reaction time as a factor, like I know my reaction time is not as good as other people's, because if you go on like a first person shooter video game, like for example, Zen, you like I think like some of these things, right? Like these shooter games.
I like chess more than anything though.
But like you've seen those people that have really, really fast twitch response on those shooter games. Like it's obscenely fast. Like to the extent that I'm like, holy fuck, is this guy a robot or what? Like I can't even imagine going that fast, right? So what I'm saying is like, so all of these are like quasi IQ tests. And when you meet people that can completely best you, like, and absolutely devastate you to the point where there's no amount of practice on this earth that's going to let you do that, you know when you've been fucked over. I'm not like, you know when you have your betters in front of you. Like it's obvious.
You know where your ceiling is too. Like in the league.
Oh yeah.
In league, I'm capped the fuck out. There is no like, I am limited by my brain. I'm not getting any higher than where I am.
So, and I have no problem admitting that like someone's better than me at it. But I objectively can tell someone is. At many domains, I can tell someone's better than me at this or that, or learning music or memorizing things, whatever it is. And like, so that's another feature of people that are on the smarter end of the spectrum is that they can recognize people that are even smarter than they are. And it takes a certain level, like you got to be at the like, maybe, I don't know, like you probably need to get to like 110 plus, and then you can start recognizing gradations in like, wait a minute, I fucking can't do that. But I can imagine a world where I could if I had different brain or something. But you have to get to a certain point to sort of just get it. Like say you have an IQ of 70, for example. Let's say, I don't know, like, I have like patients and stuff with Down syndrome or whatnot. Let's say I have someone with Down syndrome. They probably can't tell the difference between like an IQ 110, 120, 130, because they don't really know like what that world modeling looks like.
You can't model it. Yeah. So
they can't model it at all. So it's like you have to reach a certain threshold. I think this was a point like Siddhartha made in Buddhism too. Like it was kind of like part of why like everyone can't reach the sort of like this definition of nirvana, and why you might need things like priests or something. Not priests, but you might need a guide, is because like you don't know what you don't know to a level that's so out of your realm. That you just pretty much have to be taught some of these principles, and there are certain principles that simply cannot be taught. So how can you live a good life and reach sort of like nirvana on earth or what have you, if you can't know what, Buddha knows, because, he's so smart or whatever? You could at least get some of the principles filtered down into a way of living, let's say meditation or like even just ritual. A lot of religious ritual is like filtering down what makes people happy.
Yeah.
And having them do those things over and over again, even though they don't know why that ritual works, right? It is kind of a psyop in a sense, but it is like, and so how do you take complicated things and teach those to someone who can't learn it, but still make their life better? That's something that we deal with a lot. And I deal with a lot in medicine too, because like if I expect everyone to have like you know, statistics genius level understanding of how to deal with medical care, then you just won't have any fucking doctors. Like, this is a fact. Like, you just won't have mm-hmm. enough people. So I have to be able to take mold someone who may not have those capabilities and get them to at least a base level principle as simple as possible, to where 90% of the time they get something right, even though they can't get it right 99% of the time. And you can treat, like, you can help most people most of the time that way, is kind of the way I think of it. Like, you know, I can help that person help more people than they otherwise could by getting the most basic principles down and have some words to live by, sort of. And that, I think, is the way I think about it when I teach.
Your
stuff.
Brain and with IQ, it's the same as height, is like nature and nurture both play a huge role. So like you have a baby, and that baby, in the same way as height, has like a specific height that it can get to. And that's the maximum just based on the genetics. But then the second biggest part is like how well nourished is the child. And you see this in IQ too. It's like you'll inherit the possibility of only being so smart, and you won't exceed that. Or like, because we know that IQ is genetic. If you have parents that are genius in certain areas, then you'll likely also be genius in those same areas. Like, I have the same IQ score as my father. So he gave that to me. In the same area too. But it also depends on like how, like the food that you're giving kids and how much they're using their brain, which is why it's so important if you have kids to like put them in the dance, put them in the programming, put them in a bunch of different things, get those synapses forming. 'Cause then after you reach like your mid-20s, then it's kind of, Steffi talked about this before, where he doesn't feel like he learns new things, but he's based on the patterns of the things that he's perfected in the past, he learns new things that way. And it should also be said that your brain, the idea that your brain stops developing in your mid-20s is not true. Certain areas of your brain continue to develop into your mid-40s before it's a real decline. So, but you won't learn how to like, do things like wisdom in incline and creativity increase as you get older. But like, for example, reflexes or like the possibility that you'd pick up a guitar and learn how to play guitar in your 40s is probably pretty slim if you've never learned an instrument before. Sorry.
But the fact that pornographic preferences like change over time is proof that the brain continues to develop well into your 80s.
Some areas, well, I don't know what?
Listen to him. Do you want to repeat it again?
Yeah, can you repeat it again? You said well into your 80s? What?
Yeah, the fact that pornographic preferences change over time is proof of neuroplasticity that occurs well into your 80s, which is the natural end of life for most people in modern world.
That's not true. I just read an article on sexuality that said the opposite, especially for men, that men's sexual preferences don't change that much throughout life. Where are you getting this information?
He said he was talking about like fetish subcategories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People will continue to get more specific. Mm-hmm. And they continue to use more creative assemblies. And this is all proof that the brain continues to grow and develop and change over time. If our brain was frozen in our mid-20s, then everyone would like vanilla.
See, this is why I'm like, I think I'm autism adjacent, because I understand you're making a joke here, but it's still bothering me. It's like, I understand that you're memeing, but it still like irks
how
me.
How is it a joke? Like, if you look at anyone's search history, they're not searching for like midget porn again and again and again. It's changing over time. Now, why is that?
Next it's like amputee midget.
Yep.
This is why it irks me, because I like want to understand this, because
I think that, Bruce, I think after some time you just run out of new midget porn. It's quite a niche category. You might take that variable into account?
Like, Grin, I'm older than you, right? So
Always be fresh material out there. So it's not a matter of running out of it. Like, there's a constant churn. If anything, the cadence of pornography is increasing over
accelerating.
Time.
Accelerating.
The expansion, the accelerating with the desk. AI is a multiplier. It's a force multiplier. Midget porn force multiplier has been recognized by the midget porn industries. AI is not a threat to them. It's a force multiplier, but so is green screen technology. So is traditional special effects technology, such as Lord of the Rings, having even physical artifacts like scenery objects built to a certain scale to imply midgethood is good enough for most people. But also the number of midgets is increasing because the number of humans are increasing, and midgets are humans in Tani. And the last one was just that more midgets are turning to pornography to pay the bills.
I think so, yeah. It has never been, let me say this, it has never been easier in human history to monetize your midgethood. And it has also never been easier to use an iPhone to get production quality film footage than it is now. Like, if you look at the iPhone now, that is better than high-end pornographic video camera from 10, 20 years ago.
And that was a real limiter back then.
As I get older.
Is because cameras back then didn't have high enough resolution to accurately portray most midgets back in the 1960s, 1970s. Yep. We had to get more pixels on screen. No, now that's not a problem at all.
I'm not sure if Grin can hear me.
Can you hear Grin?
No, tragically, no. I will.
You may
sign
need
off.
To rejoin. I think.
It sounds like you're in a car or something.
I know you're.
I've had to join like five times. Steffi's probably really bored of switching my mic on and off because I tried like five times to get up here to share this area of, you know, just to really counterpoint Zintani. Okay, bye.
Speaking of like iPhone, like. Being superior to like, you know, 90s equipment, do any of you guys like produce content on your phones? Because I feel like phones are like, you know, like just you just mindlessly scroll through, you know, social media, but like when you actually want to like get stuff done and be creative and produce stuff, you fucking use a desktop, right? Like no one fucking creates anything from their phone, right?
Can we get back to the porn topic? Because I don't.
So, like, what I do is like, I have gotten to the point where it's like, there's not enough midget porn out there. So, I actually create midget porn for myself that includes like maybe like a dozen midgets, because it's really hard to find a dozen midgets in one video. And so, that's maybe because I'm older, though, to Grin's point.
I've been looking into this because I thought I was gay for the longest time, but now I don't. Now I'm bi, or I'm trying it out. So I was studying like male sexuality to kind of get a wrap around it. But there's like conflicting evidence now that I'm thinking about it. Because on one hand, I remember reading that men, much more than women, are much less malleable in their sexual preferences. Like a man in his 40s is less likely to develop a new kink than a woman is. But then on the other hand, they also, like, they've done this study with rats and testosterone where they, and this is like very demoralizing to read as a woman, but I think it should be like realized, is when they put a female mouse in with a male mouse that has like testosterone running through it, the male mouse will like vigorously have sex with the female. But then after doing that a couple times, wearing itself out, it will not touch the female mouse again. It just gets bored. And the female, to the point where the female will like start like rubbing up against him, licking him, like trying to seduce him, and he's just bored. He's over it. And then when they introduce another mouse, the male mouse then vigorously humps the new one. So this seems to be like conflicting for me, because on one hand you have evidence here or that supports the idea that men don't really deviate that much from their preferences, but then another body of evidence which shows that men need like variety or change, which is kind of confusing to me now that I'm looking at it.
Evolutionary wise, it's not about preferences, it's about insemination. So if the mouse already has multiple times sex with a female mouse, probably it's wired to believe that it's already pregnant and then it goes for another one. I would think that works much more than mice thinking whether they prefer a blonde mice or a redhead mice, and then their preferences change. I think it's fully on getting more offspring. Nothing else.
Yeah, like you want to like diversify your genetic like lineage. I don't know why this is surprising to you.
No, I'm saying that there's two bodies of evidence, but I get what you're saying in that like one of them is biological drive and the other is more like psychological kinks or whatever. They're not necessarily intertwined.
There's this principle in like Taoism. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's just like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably kind of starts to happen. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web 3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts, forgetting how to fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code, and now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yambato and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Is it really worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? Really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
They started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out, teaching all these plebiscites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits, all you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, this shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile over here rewiring features, more critical thinking, less knee-jerk, more evolution, less shit coin preachers pretending to be teachers. Y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rat fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the bitter end. And sometimes it's better to just like move on.
Channel Spaces.